There's the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, teachers influencing us, transmitted through Sangharakshita in true kind of cosmic style. He is introducing us to those amazing forces of the universe. And this is a picture of the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara with his 1,000 arms stretching out to the world, made up of photos of order members, photos of Dharmacharis, Dharmacharinis around the world. So, there's this sense we're all united in this one body of the Bodhicitta, and we're all reaching out in all our different forms to manifest that in the world. Like this, you see, the golden rays flow down. See, I've had good fun doing this. And then some of those get directed into Buddhist centres. Different order members choose to express their altruistic practice in different ways, but some of us choose to really focus that around Buddhist centres to make the Dharma available to the world that way. What's next on the slides now? There we go. Dharmacharis and Dharmacharinis, Dharma farers, members of the Priratna Buddhist order. That's who runs the Buddhist centre. And there's loads of Buddhist centres, loads of Priratna Buddhist centres all around the world, 65 or so, 15 retreat centres. And each of them's autonomous, so it's not one big super organisation. Each of us is our own autonomous charity or association or group or whatever they might be. They're not all charities. But we're linked through friendship and shared inspiration, so we've got very strong ties with each other. And with all the golden rays, you know, sweeping down through us, and that's all in common. So organisationally, we're a charity, we have members, and all the members of Priratna Buddhist community in Bristol are local order members who are sufficiently interested in the centre to want to be members. That's all really. So most order members in Bristol, not quite all, are members of Priratna Bristol, the charity that runs this place. And then from within that grouping, there's a smaller grouping who form the council. So these are the people that actually take the strategic decisions and keep an eye on how everything's going. The other members would get minutes, they'd come to this meeting or send their apologies to it, ideally. Yeah, so most of the members are not necessarily hugely involved, though they might be, but the council are the body who really figure out what we're doing. And the council is made up of two other groupings, the trustees and the centre team. That's all of the trustees for 2015. So Sinanada and Mokshanandi sent their apologies. Janaka is at the back. Radalochini, did she send apologies?
She did.
Okay,
she did.
Thank you. Taranita's technical assistant over at the side there. There's me. Pranyamati has been our secretary for, we think, around 3 years. He's done a splendid job taking minutes of all our long and complicated discussions and essentialising those and distributing them to everyone who needs to have them, amending them according to people's likes and dislikes about what they want to have had said that they said and such, which is quite a job. Very grateful for that. It's been fantastic. And Pavla Parla is at the back there also.
Well, the reason I'm a trustee, or have been a trustee, is that I think it is a good way of making a contribution to the centre, and also, as well, having an influence on the centre. There's things that we all like and dislike about any situation. There's things that we think are good or not good about any sort of situation. And obviously you can sort of sit back and moan about the things that aren't good, or you can get involved and try and have an influence on those things. So I think it's important to play a part if you feel that the situation warrants it, if you feel that it's important and you're able to do so. What I think we do, my view of what we do as trustees, is to attempt to take a high-level view of the situation, and so try to avoid getting involved and embroiled in the day-to-day running of the centre, and try to delegate that to to other people, but instead to look more strategically at the direction that the centre should be taking and the investments we should be making, the money we should be spending or not spending, all of course trying to be influenced by our vision, our Buddhist vision. So I suppose having just mentioned finances, that is inevitably a big part of what the trustees are responsible for, not necessarily what they do, but they do have fiscal responsibility. So if it all goes horribly wrong, then financially, then the trustees would be held accountable. So it is an important responsibility, both in terms of what the centre is and what you're doing at the centre, but also in terms of what you take on personally. So it is something that needs to be taken quite seriously.
And that's the centre team in 2015. There were a lot of us at the start of the year, fewer by the end of the year. We've got streamlined. So you probably all know Jyoti, me, Badra and Karunavarpu, I guess.
Well, I suppose a specific thing I do is I do the weekly mail out. So if you get the weekly mail out, that's usually me, unless Sharla Marlin has started dipping into it. I suppose I help with the programme planning. I talk to anybody who comes through the door at any moment when I'm here. You know, you get all kinds of people knocking on the door and saying hello. Could be anything, really. Clean the toilets, help with Sangha Works.
Answer loads of random emails.
And not so many phone calls, because we don't get so many of those, but lots of random emails, like, can we come and stay at your place? No. I'm going to stay. Just all kinds of stuff, really. Would you like this strange prayer wheel that somebody who was a Buddhist in my family has left us because we think it's really creepy and that okay. So, just anything really. So loads of things. So going and buying soya milk. We ran out of soya milk. Okay. Soya milk. So it's all a bit of everything. Mm-hmm.
And you help with the Women of House Fraud Nation?
Yes, that's also officially part of my job, isn't it? Doing things with the Women of House Fraud Nation, Women Training Fraud Nation.
So, yes, and there's also the running of the healing rooms upstairs, which is another of our income streams, renting out those rooms. What other things do we have to.
Well, Badra manages the healing rooms, doesn't he, for example, as well as doing loads of DIY and all kinds of other things.
Generally engaging with the Sangha and whatever else needs to happen. Yeah, so all the things that need to happen here, really, we do. So the centre team and the trustees meet together from time to time and talk about what needs talking about. And the centre team meet weekly to talk about what needs talking about on that day-to-day level as well. As well as developing our practice through communicating in those meetings.
Especially at the moment.
Indeed. This is Judith, who is our finance manager. So I knew she wasn't here, so that's partly why I wanted pictures of people. So the centre team, they receive a living allowance, so money for their living expenses, and so does Judith, although she's not on that decision-making sort of meeting. Now, Judith works very hard. She's our treasurer and our finance manager, so she does all the bookkeeping, she keeps an eye on us, keeping in line with our statutory requirements, our charity commission regulations and things like that. She's just really good at all that kind of organisational stuff that some of us find rather tedious. So she really keeps us on the ball with all that. Very, very efficient, very, very clear, confident. And we're all very confident that the financial figures are what they need to, they're telling us what we want to know.
She's good at reclaiming lots of money.
She is. She is. She follows up the overpaid utilities bills. She follows up on endless gift aid slips. And well, she just got an extra 4,000 by chasing people for gift aid.
£4,000.
Yeah. So, yeah, really. A lot of legwork in doing that, but it really adds up.
And it was a lot of work.
It was a lot of work. It was a really lot of work to chase all the people that might be eligible for gift aid. Yeah, fantastic. So then we have loads of volunteers who contribute. These are just some of the regular people. So in 2015 at least, Lisa was helping us with processing some of the gift aid slips that go into the Dana bowl until she became ill. Darman comes and counts the money every week and banks it for us. Nick has done some work on publicity and printing flyers and programmes and things for us. And Sarah's been helping with some of the admin that I could get bogged down in if she weren't doing it for me, which is fantastic. So there are people that are around pretty regularly. And Kath and Annie have been bringing in ethical flowers, locally locally grown seasonal flowers from the gardens they garden, their allotments and gardens they care for, and bringing those onto the shrine regularly, which has been really lovely to have, actually, something really fresh and relevant.
And Kat's made the beautiful planter out front. The big
she's borrowed that.
A calf project.
So yeah, it's just some of the people that I could sort of easily think of who are really regularly helping, but loads of people have given in different ways. Sangha works on a Wednesday mornings, getting a pretty busy occasion. So at the top there, we've got people who are here pretty regularly. Tom, Louisa, Mark, Sylvia and Maureen. So these people do clean the loos, hoover, make shrines, do all the weekly, clean the kitchen, all the things that just do need doing. This week they were all out in the courtyard weeding and sweeping and tidying up out there. They're just working hard. Vimla Vajri and Angie are often around doing gardening, often on a Wednesday morning, looking after the plant pots and dealing with the compost bins and things. Then there's me and Judith and Sarah often here on a Wednesday. Me and Sarah aren't always, but we're often doing our office things. But we all check in together at the beginning of the morning with everybody. Abhaya Maitri is often here because she has a job cleaning in the healing rooms, and she checks in with us too. And the centre team were usually, mostly, around. Nara Vera, Kamajoti Bhattar and Karina Bharti. So, yeah, it's really lovely when you come in and there's all this sort of energy, all these people wanting to help and look after the place. Come and join us any Wednesday morning, 10 o'clock. I wanted to specially mention Vimala Vajri. She's cringing. Because she's been doing a load of work on a voluntary basis for programme planning. She does a lot of teaching in the classes and courses, and she coordinates Sangha Night, and she helps me figure out who should be on which teams, when for the intro courses. And I'm often saying that all that's like a four-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. You're sort of sliding around people's preferences and availabilities and who would work well with who. And it's quite a lot of work. And it's been fantastic, as well as looking after the garden and all sorts of other things around the place. Can I stand up anybody who's done any teaching here in the last 18 months? Any classes, courses, study groups, anything like that? Given a talk once?
High five!
Yeah! Clap! And lots more who aren't here. Loads and loads of more members contribute in that way. Just come in and give up their time to give the Dharma. Fabulous. And we see a lot of what's visible here, but there are also small study groups which are increasingly happening in this building, but can happen in people's homes as well. So people leading groups, especially for mitras. We haven't got that many non-order members here. Is there anyone here who's been on a class team in the last 18 months, a course team or something? You did for a while,
Claire. Not in the last 18 months. But
yeah, you did. Well, it was beginning of 2015. And Tim, I think, has been on
Not in the last year.
Not in the last year. Okay, well, we've got a lot of people that have. We'll get to that eventually. But lots of people help by, you know, being on teams, supporting classes as well.
And supporting retreats.
And supporting retreats, indeed, yes. And then everyone really who's been here and has talked to somebody and been friendly has participated. Everyone who's been here and meditated is part of what we do here. We've created the energy that keeps this place going. Everyone who's given money at all. I reckon everyone in this room has played a part in 2015 and the beginning of this year. A huge number of people are giving to keep this in existence, to allow us to keep channeling the bodhicitta into Bristol. There's probably a lot of people, specific things I've forgotten. I'm always a bit nervous by picking people out because of all the ones I might not remember, but that's kind of how it all happens. And yeah, Manju Bhadra is here. So tell us what you do, Manju Bhadra, you're not on your boat.
I'm the president of the centre. What that actually means is that I have absolutely no power or influence. It's not like an American president. But I'm a sort of, let's say, a mature, rather than old, a mature friend of the centre. So I see my role as just to be around as somebody who's been fairly experienced in the movement and in the order over the last, 40 years. So no specific role, just a kind of a hovering presence. And I interfere when...
You're a wise friend.
Yeah, yeah. I interfere sometimes.
So that's kind of who runs the centre. No one and lots of people. Lots and lots of people. A bit nervous of clicking this because I don't really know what's on the next thing. Let's go back. That's the troubles of the world. So that is what the centre's for. We're in a troubled world. We're all sorts of problems we all know too much about. And really, I do think the Buddhist Centre is an answer to that. That's what the Buddhist Centre is here for. The Centre's for making the three jewels manifest in the world, in Bristol. Making those transcendent values available, making them, communicating them. And we do that by creating Sangha, by unifying the Sangha, by meeting together, tuning in, making sure that we're really sparking and reinforcing those values in each other so that we really can strongly embody those in the world. So the centre's here as a refuge and as a beacon for us and for the world. So the Sangha is how those, you know, those values are made manifest, how they're embodied, how we really can touch them, see them, be them, know them in each other and in ourselves. And that's what I've been emphasising all the time I've been chair. Let's really go create Sangha. Let's really make this Sangha more harmonious, more powerful, more strong. And in 2015, we made some changes. We had some particular emphases to really try and bring that into being more. So we had three main ways to look at deepening and unifying Sangha. We continued doing a lot of the things we'd always done, but also we set up the new introductory courses to provide a clearer way into our Sangha, a clearer introduction to our values, a clearer introduction to Buddhism and to Sri Ratna. So we could invite people more easily, and also to facilitate us working together more, forming more teams. So working together was the second main emphasis. We were really emphasising working in teams, bigger teams than we'd had before, rather than having one order member leading this class and another one doing that sort of often on their own. And the third thing we did was to introduce the generosity economy, the Dharma economy. So I'll just say briefly about how those went are going. So the courses I think are good. They're good courses. They're a good clear introduction. They're quite a quick entry point for a lot of people, but they provide that opportunity where you can get enough ground to really become part of the Sangha quite quickly for those who are keen enough to want to do that. And they attracted a lot of people. We reckon 153 people started courses. There's a drop-off rate, so not that many finished courses, but at least they came in and got a taste of what we do. We also probably led over 100 drop-in introductions to meditation with our lunchtime classes and Saturday morning classes. So a lot of people were able to encounter the Dharma that we've got to offer. Of course, we did a lot of other things for the existing Sangha and for other people. We had, kind of going deeper things. The going deeper meditation sessions and the Wednesday lunchtime sessions, part of a increasing culture of meditation and talking about meditation. We had that lovely rainy season retreat led by Ratna Vandana. Seems a long, long time ago now, but really was a highlight of 2015. A big Sangha retreat. We started the full moon pujas, that's still running every full moon. Women's mornings for women who are training for ordination were picked up regularly. Kema Jyoti and Mokshanandi leading. Mitra groups were going well. We've got two men's Mitra groups now and three men's ones still running. Lots of women Mitras have completed the Dharma training course for Mitras, but several still going. And we have Buddhist Action Month. We have that engaged Buddhism time in June last year as this, but 2015 was the first time we really emphasised that and made a thing of it. Loads and loads of other special events and festivals and things going on all the time. And in 2015, 16 people became Mitras. So we had Mitra ceremonies for 16 people, which was great. And Bodhi Pushpa was ordained. So yeah, growing Sangha and a deepening Sangha. Lots of activities to facilitate that. Working together is also, something we emphasise that's going well. It's going well at all sorts of levels. The teams for the introductory courses have been great. They've been really popular. People have really enjoyed them, enjoyed being on the courses, enjoyed working together, meeting together for food beforehand. There's a real buzz to those. And, it's like those courses have got two things going on, introducing newcomers to the Dharma and people engaging with each other on teams to build Sangha that way, both of those. The team and the trustees have started meeting. We weren't always meeting together as a council. We had these sort of trustees and the team, and I was the only one on both that was doing the go-between thing, sort of what each of them thought. So it's really great that we all meet together now. That's made a huge difference in working together. Sangha Works that I referred to earlier, it's really picking up momentum, people working together to look after the place. So that's going well. And then the generosity economy, the Dharma economy, that's going well. It's heading in the right direction. Well, what we did, for those who are newer, was for the first time we stopped all charges for classes and courses. So we stopped saying you've got to pay to come in the door, which actually I've really wanted to do all the time I've been chair. I just think it's so important for Sangha. You can't charge people to make friends with each other. Being in touch with your human potential is priceless. It doesn't make any sense to me that you'd pay to connect with that. We're trying to grow a community. We're not trying to teach a course or a class, teach you about Buddhism so you pay for that thing you receive that you then go away and do what you will with. We're trying to grow our connections with each other, be part of something much, much more organic and real than something, a service you'd pay for. So we're not running evening classes, we're growing the community, and to me that means you don't charge people to participate. So really important, and it's going well. We stopped charging people to come in, instead said, OK, this is for all of us. Do you want it to happen? Let's share the responsibility. If you want it to happen, you need to contribute, and that means putting your hand in the in your pocket. If you want that to be available for others, if you want us to keep offering the Dharma to Bristol, that needs funding. Let's all help. And people have really responded. Basically, the number that in the financial reports that was in the classes and courses income is close to the number that's now in donations. The number that was in donations is close to the classes and courses income, because people do also give donations on some courses, although it's not a charge. So that shift has basically happened, all but just over £1,000. We're only £1,000 down, which is better than I hoped for the first year, actually. And our other income streams are down. We also make a bit of money from our yoga classes. We hire out this space sometimes for other groups to use. We had a bit of profit from the shop, which we closed, although we're still making some from the book sales. It's not like the shop. And we have another income stream, significant income stream from the healing rooms, renting out the healing rooms upstairs. And because we've been so focused on Sangha, those other income streams have dropped. Mm-hmm. So we are still down on the previous year by about 13,000, which is about what it would cost to have another team member. So we are really a team member short. Nara Vera has joined us for 2 days a week, but he needs full support. He needs to, he needs more than 2 days to be here for being involved. Other people haven't really quite got enough to cover their living expenses. So we need more. That's the message. But we did make a small surplus in 2015 by trimming the team and managing everything very carefully, by Judith reclaiming all those things she reclaims and keeping a close eye on our finances. So we did all right, but we could do better. And if not us, then who is going to do that? Who's going to make that possible? It's not like, we can't make the sort of appeals Oxfam might, or Save the Children or something. It's the people who come here who really understand what we're doing, who are going to respond and want to participate in making that possible financially as well as in all those other ways. So, direct debit increases, always welcome. So, what next? What's the next steps for unifying our Sangha, really getting on the same sheet, the same page, looking ahead? On Tuesday, a lot of us were here listening to Ratnaguna, who is very inspiring on faith and imagination. And something I keep picking up on him saying is, what if the point of the spiritual life isn't to know something, but to imagine better, to imagine greatly, which I just find really inspiring. It sort of opens me much more than trying to know something. It's just like it's like a revisioning of what it is we're doing. What if that's the aim of what we're about? So he's saying, what if we imagine that what we're trying to do is know that we're embraced by all the Buddhas? What if we imagine that the world is a world of beauty and flow, a world filled with thousands of rays of coloured light in all directions, with the sky filled with Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, where every sound, the sound of the breeze in the trees and the birds singing and the streams and rivers, are the sound of the Dharma. We can hear the Dharma in everything. And perhaps the reason we don't see that is just because we're enclosed in a lotus bud of our own selfhood, which sometimes opens a bit and closes again, and we get glimpses of this amazing, fantastical, magical world beyond. What if we consider that reality is pressing in on us all the time with all its wonder and mystery and beauty, its truth and its love? What if we consider that each of us is practicing to contribute to this stream of cosmic stream of positive energy, transcendent energy in the world? And what if our purpose in the Buddhist Centre, in being here, is just to help each other imagine more vividly, help each other imagine more greatly, more fully, more beautifully? Does this building do that? Does it help us as it is? Does it express those values that we want to see? Those, yeah, that world of wonder. Well, it partly does. A lot of people are very struck by the atmosphere when they come in. You probably can remember coming in and being met by a really warm and friendly atmosphere, going into the shrine room and kind of being slightly wowed by being in something else there, different energy. But look around you. Look around this room. Just take it in with fresh eyes. Think about how the shop front looks on the street. Think about how easy it is to find the front door if you don't know where you're going. Think about the times when the centre's all locked up and there's no one around, or the people that are around are shut down in the basement, so perhaps if you didn't know where to look for us, it wouldn't be that easy to know there was anyone around. Maybe you've been here having a kind of quite tender, intimate conversation and someone's walked through in the middle of it. Is it always easy to find places for the meetings you want to have, for conversations you want to have, even to hold a study group you want to have? We're juggling at the moment, saying, oh, all these study groups want to meet, and, well, if there's one here, then if you move to there, and, you know, yeah, it's not always easy to fit in all the activities we want to. Does this building really open your imagination as fully as it might? Does it really help you connect with our values as fully as it might? Could it give us more opportunities to meet together on that basis? I think this building has a huge amount of potential. We've decided we want to stay in this building. It's in a really good location. We've got big rooms which aren't easy to find. For the value of the building, I don't think we'd do better, and there'd be a lot of work. Any building we took over wouldn't immediately be a Buddhist space that served us. So we want to be here. There's a lot of potential, but it takes a lot of imagination to see that. So again, can we just really imagine it more fully? I think if we were to really unite on what we wanted for this centre, really put our energy in it, that would be a really unifying, deepening Sangha process to do. I think all sorts would come out along the way. We're already finding that in the centre team, trying to agree quite what it is we'd want to do. But what would it be like? What would it be like if this whole place reflected a simple, elegant beauty? A real sort of peaceful, coherent aesthetic, which was warm and peopled. What would it be like if the front was beautiful, really visible, something a bit different to the rest of the street, but not out of kilter with it, with really clear signage? It was really clear who we are, what's here from walking by. Maybe natural colours, natural materials, more greenery, more planting, contemporary, clear, clean signage. If it was easy to find your way in, the door was obvious. It was easier to find order members and experienced mitres to talk to when you got here. There were people kind of around, nearer that front door. What if even maybe we could have a flat so a few people could live together here, really deepen their practice by living together and make the whole place feel more lived in, perhaps help out with a little bit of caretaking now and again, just really make this not a kind of lockdown, shut up nighttime place, but something that was always alive. What if we had better hangout spaces? What if we had a kitchen with tables where we could sit and eat, a kitchen diner with an oven so we could make suppers for our team meetings or for the whole sangha, a dishwasher, nice place to hang out together in groups. If the courtyard and garden were really landscaped and planted and just full of beauty as well, nice places to hang out. If we had a quiet meeting space for those private conversations. What if the whole place felt more like a temple, somewhere open and accessible, somewhere order members and mitras could just come into easily without us having to arrange huge bunches of keys? And if we had a second shrine room, perhaps you could meditate at any time, whether or not there was a class on. It would be somewhere that you could always use. If our shrine room was even more stunning and beautiful, think stained glass windows, oak floor, gorgeous lighting, just, light wells. I don't know, there's just, what could it have? What would be different? And it was all, the building was all more integrated. We had a staircase so the downstairs wasn't sort of out and round and in and out, and we could all get in and out. The whole building kind of was unified in the way I want the Sangha to unify. We don't know quite what's possible. We'll need a small group of people to really envision, really pull this together. But I want to know what everybody thinks. So we're going to have a process. We're going to just start asking you to imagine and dream today, but you'll be invited to do that again in the autumn. And then a few people will take forward, if there's enough momentum, enough interest, enough ideas, if we think this is what the Sangha wants, then there'll be a whole process and procedure to refine and come up with ideas. But I'm just inviting you to start to dream, really, start to imagine what could be possible in this building. So I've got some little question sheets for you to play with. This is why, rather than brainstorming, I've read it's better for people to think by themselves. So just think you to fill in by yourselves, and then we'll share what comes out of that.